I am Linda van Tolberg for BizNews. William Lowe, Director, South African Tax at Sable International, is the expert to consult regarding tax matters for non-resident and South African residents who are receiving income from abroad. And he's in the BizNews studio with me. Well, William, welcome again to BizNews.
Thank you, Linda. It's nice to be back.
Well, I hear rumors of tax returns that have to be lodged where previously they were not requested or required. What are the key challenges that you come across right now?
So what seems to be happening is SARS is trying to get more information and update their records. Because of this, they're asking for returns that weren't previously required. So here we've got two aspects. One is return that SARS knows should have been lodged, and other returns that SARS doesn't know whether they should be not lodged or not. So the ones that should be lodged, generally SARS has got the supporting documents, and they think that one should have been lodged by the taxpayer. The taxpayer then needs to lodge the return. The problem is that if it's an older return, the taxpayer might not have that old information, in which case they're sitting with a problem, because SARS has the records, but SARS will not give the records because they say it's third-party data issued by the employer on behalf of the taxpayer and won't give it to the taxpayer. So the taxpayer is sitting with a problem as to how to get that information. Then you also have the other side where SARS is now asking for old historic returns, and they're not sure if a return should be lodged, but they're just opening and using a gunshot approach there. So there the taxpayer's got two basic options. One, see if they can find any records, see if any returns should be lodged, or otherwise they need to ask SARS for SARS to mark those returns as not required. If they're going to use that route, they need to substantiate why the returns aren't required. For example, they left in 2002, and SARS is saying they want 2002 to 2010, and they know that in that period they were not in the country and there would be no information, then they do an affidavit to show SARS that's the situation. That's basically what they need to do from that side.
It's become quite complicated, it seems. And so, you know, we've got double tax treaties that you do not pay double tax. So, you know, is that enough, or do you have to tell SARS everything, even if you're non-resident or, you know, living overseas?
Okay, so SARS's perspective here is that if they haven't been informed that you are a non-tax resident, they're going to assume that they can tax everything that you've earned, even though they might not be allowed to under the DTA. So SARS is not looking at first the DTA, they're looking at first, in our records, do you show as a non-resident, yes or no? If no, we want everything, even though they're not actually required or allowed to request that information. And that's why tax immigration is so important, because it controls what SARS is allowed to request. What SARS also does is that even though a DTA can give you relief, their assumption is if you haven't tax immigrated, the DTA can't apply because you haven't told us that you've left the country. So there's a bit of backward logic there.
Well, I know of people who've, you know, were taxed twice in the country that they're overseas and home. So what are the rules in terms of that if you've been double taxed?
So what's also happening around the world is a lot of the tax offices are now looking at whether the tax credits that they've allowed are actually allowable under the DTA. And that's where this is becoming very important, to know what taxing rights you've got, so that you can see, should you be getting all your money back from SARS and only paying tax in the other jurisdiction, or will the other jurisdiction be allowed to use the tax credits? I do know that's becoming more relevant now in the UK, where the UK is looking at pensions and provident fund annuities and saying, well, that under the DTA is only taxable in the UK. You need to get your money back from SARS. We're going to tax you in full and not allow any tax credits, which can cause double taxation. And I worked out a worst case scenario where the effective tax could be upwards of 80%.
Whoa, that's
high. You're earning a lot of money. If you're earning, say, over R1 million or over R2 million worth of pension income in South Africa, and it's not taxable in South Africa, SARS is going to charge you tax close to 40% on effectively. And in the UK, at that level, you might be crossing into their 40% bracket, in which case you're sitting with 40% both sides, 80%.
So can you help people who are in that situation?
We can. So we always need to get all the ducks in a row. And what we generally do is we'll first look at what is scenario, what is the best option before we inform SARS of anything so that you don't have a problem. Because depending on what the situation is, you might have to apply for a VDP or voluntary disclosure program, or otherwise, if you can, try and start the process to get your money back from SARS before you tell the other tax office that I need to pay you a lot more money than I thought.
Are you expecting other tax changes? Are they in the program of the government?
So I think SARS is looking at all the details because a lot of them were developed where SARS didn't really consider the impacts on South Africa. Because if you look at the South African Tax Act, it says that foreign pensions are all exempt from South African tax. So I'm not sure if SARS is going to try and override that, or otherwise I might look at redoing the double taxation agreements so that where the person's living outside the country, the tax rate still falls in South Africa and then in the other jurisdiction. But that's not the common agreement around the world for most scenarios. So from that side, I think it's going to get quite messy. And then linked to that, you've got the idea of the Western Cape where they want to try and get people to work as nomads in South Africa. But that'll also get quite messy because firstly, we've got the Home Affairs issues of getting the visas. Then you've got the issue of SARS wanting to try and tax that money. And under the current legislation, those people could, in theory, avoid the taxes in South Africa for a year or two, up to 5 years if they plan their life correctly. So SARS loses taxing rights on that because of the ordinarily residence test and then the physical presence test. So I think SARS is looking at that very carefully, and there might be changes on that. I would personally prefer having a more simpler definition of what a tax resident is than a vague one which says it's ordinarily residence, and then a 6 year cycle for the physical presence test is a very, very long cycle.
Yeah, because most places who have nomad visas are actually give you a better tax regime. And that's why people go there.
So I think most of them are trying to get the economy flowing. But if you look at a nomad system inside South Africa, although it might show or have more economic influx, there isn't really employment growth from that, most likely. And I think South Africa needs to look at how to do the employment growth. So SARS needs to look at those type of aspects. And it's going to be quite difficult for them.
You mentioned previously that, sorry.
So SARS is also looking at trying to force foreign employers for registering for tax in South Africa to pay the pay as you earn monthly for taxpayers. However, I think most foreign companies will not be interested in doing that. In which case, then the South African tax resident who's sitting here and working for foreign companies might be looking at whether they need to move or otherwise be out of a job because foreign employers are not interested.
You talked, previously about that SARS is also worried about it being hacked, because a lot of companies are being hacked at the moment in South Africa. Is that something to worry about?
Always. You have to remember that SARS is linked to Home Affairs. So if you get into SARS, you could access Home Affairs data and vice versa. I'm not sure how good that interlink is and whether there's a risk there, but I'm pretty sure the government's looking at that to try and tighten it down. I have noticed that the Mobi app at the moment isn't working. So there's a suspicion on my part that maybe something's gone wrong then, or SARS has found a weakness. So that needs to be looked at. But the bigger problem from a SARS side is that the one-time pins that they use, they require email address and a South African cell phone number. And South African cell phone numbers aren't always kept by foreign taxpayers, which means that those cell phone numbers get recycled in South Africa, which is actually a security risk. And then it's very difficult for SARS to update those details.
So, how do you navigate all this? What would you tell people that come to Sable International?
Well, the first starting point is always not just tax compliance, but also have you set everything up correctly before you leave in. So the first thing, always make sure that you are tax compliant, where you go to the CTC S page and make sure everything's green. The other side is always make sure that you have your own e-filing login so that if you need to fix something, you can. Because if the details are your old tax practitioner and they've left or closed down, you're sitting with a big, big problem to try and sort that out. And then linked to that, you need to make sure that the email address that you've got on e-filing and the cell phone number you've got in the e-filing are either ones that you can control, or they're with somebody that you trust and will be able to contact indefinitely. So my inclination there, although SARS doesn't like this thought process, is for a South African cell phone number. If the foreign individual doesn't have somebody in South Africa that they can trust with their cell phone number, is to use the office cell phone number as a holding cell phone number. And my opinion with SARS is that what they should do is, if they see that a cell phone number is used for more than, say, three taxpayer or tax numbers, that cell phone number is then blocked from using for one-time pins, but it can hold that placeholder so that SARS knows that that avenue is secure and the taxpayer only uses the email for one-time pin authorizations, which works quite fine.
The South Africans, that sounds quite complex, the tax in South African with non-residents. How does it compare with other countries?
I think it is a lot more complex. If you look at the tax return, you can see SARS has not built anything to make it easy for a non-resident. The whole tax return, that's, as it stands at the moment, is aimed at a South African resident or tax resident who doesn't have many foreign links, and even some of the exemptions that a South African tax resident is allowed aren't even covered inside the tax return. I personally think SARS needs to relook at all of that. And I also think that their system that they're doing to prove that you're a non-tax resident is not ideal. My personal opinion is that where somebody is tax immigrated, SARS needs to put that date on your IT registration form or IT-150, so it's always tracked there. Because what's also happening is you have people who are returning to South Africa, and at the moment SARS has got no mechanism for them to be able to become tax resident again.
If you're living overseas and you get income from South Africa, so how do you manage that?
Okay. So this side, you've got to look at two aspects. One is an employee working for a South African company, and the other is somebody who's living abroad and then cashing their funds in South Africa, which are commonly your retirement annuity, pension fund, or provident fund, and how those have to be dealt with. So let's just look at the funds first. So just that you understand, when a fund encashes those on behalf of a taxpayer, they apply to SARS for a tax directive, which SARS will then issue, telling them what tax to withhold. That SARS will get that money, and then the fund is meant to raise an IRP5. Now, what's happening in some scenarios is that the companies are not raising those IRP5s, but SARS has a tax directive on record. So when you try and do your tax return, SARS picks up that tax directive, I should say, and says, well, we know there's a tax directive for this tax year. Where's the IRP5? Please give it to us so we can do your tax return. Then they force the employee or the person to go to the fund to try and get that. And that's where problems start, because the funds sometimes don't want to issue those old IRP5s, which is a problem. So there are ways to deal with that. If you do get to that headache where the fund doesn't want to issue the IRP5 and it should be issued, you can always reach out to us and we can explain how to deal with that. It is a longish process, so don't expect it to be fast. Then the other one is somebody working for a South African company. So here we have to separate out the tax event and the cash flow event. So from a taxing perspective, firstly, the employer in South Africa needs to make sure the IRP5 shows correctly where the person was when they did the work for the South African entity. So even if the company in South Africa deducts pay as you earn, which they will default to because that's a safety precaution, they should be aware of where the work is being done. And they need to mark on the IRP5 whether they're aware that the taxpayer was outside the country when they did the work or inside the country. And that just changes the source code. So all that means is it says that we as the employer are aware that the taxpayer in question was doing the work in or out of South Africa. Then the taxpayer is allowed to claim tax relief to get those taxes back. Now, a lot of employers don't want to fix this because they don't understand this. The problem is linked to the fraud side at SARS. So SARS's situation is that they would expect the employer to know where the taxpayer is. If the employer says that the taxpayer was inside the country, SARS will want to tax it in full and not give the taxpayer relief. And often the taxpayer should be allowed relief. Now, SARS doesn't want to fix those codes inside SARS itself, which I can fully understand, because SARS, as you know, There has been a lot of corruption. There's a lot of fraud around, and SARS gets the SARS official gets intensely questioned where they need to override it to make sure that there isn't fraud, which causes a lot of delays and problems. So SARS doesn't like doing that, but they can do it. And that's why SARS needs to train employers and funds to interact, to recode the IP files correctly so that they can be taxed correctly.
Talks about IRB5s. If you are one of the nomads and you live in South Africa, you know, so there is no IRB5. Overseas company is not going to give you an IRB5.
Yeah. So in that type of scenario, at the moment, how you deal with it is you'll deal with it as a provisional taxpayer, where every 6 months you'll estimate what your income is, pay your taxes provisionally, and then afterwards see what the final tax is. And if you need guidance on how to deal with that correctly, you can always reach out to us as well.
William Lowe, such a maze to go through with tax in South Africa. Thank you so much for speaking to us.